Chapter 70. I agreed to sit down with Elise's high-priced media consultant. Not because I had any intention of going through with tonight's charity gala, but because it was the only way I knew of to make sure that everyone else left me alone. There are three things we're going to work on today, Avery. The consultant, an elegant black woman with a posh British accent, had introduced herself as Landon. I had no idea if that was her first name or her last. After the attack this morning, there will be more interest in your story, and your sister's, than ever. Libby wouldn't hurt me, I thought desperately. She wouldn't let Drake hurt me. And then, she didn't block his number. The three things we'll be practicing today are what to say, how to say it, and how to identify things you shouldn't say and demur. Lynn was poised, precise, and more stylish than either of my stylists. Now, obviously, there is going to be some interest in the unfortunate incident that took place this morning, but your legal team would prefer it you to say as little on that front as possible. That front being the second attempt on my life in 3 days. Libby isn't involved. She can't be. Repeat after me, Landon instructed. I'm grateful to be alive, and I'm grateful to be here tonight. I blocked out the thoughts dogging me as much as I could. I'm grateful to be alive, I repeated stonily. And I'm grateful to be here tonight. Landon gave me a look. How do you think you sound? Pissed, I guessed dourly. Landon offered me a gentle suggestion. Perhaps try sounding less pissed. She waited a moment and then assessed the way I was sitting. Open up your shoulders, loosen those muscles. Your posture is the first thing the audience's brain is going to latch onto. If you look like you're going to fold in on yourself, if you make yourself small, that sends a message. With a roll of my eyes, I tried to sit up a little straighter and let my hands fall to my sides. I'm grateful to be alive, and I'm grateful to be here tonight. No, Landon gave a shake of her head. You want to sound like a real person. I am a real person. Not to the rest of the world, not yet. Right now you're a spectacle. There was nothing unkind in Landon's tone. Pretend you're back home. You're in your comfort zone. What was my comfort zone? Talking to Max, who was MIA for the foreseeable future? Crawling into bed with Libby? Think of someone you trust. That hurt in a way that should have hollowed me out, but left me feeling like I might throw up instead. I swallowed. I'm grateful to be alive, and I'm grateful to be here tonight. It seems forced, Avery. I ground my teeth. It is forced. Does it have to be? Landon let me marinate in that question for a moment. Is no part of you grateful to have been given this opportunity, to live in this house, to know that no matter what happens, you and the people you love will always be taken care of? Money was security. It was safety. It was knowing that you could screw up without screwing up your life. If Libby did let Drake onto the estate, if he's the one who shot at me, she couldn't have known that was going to happen. Aren't you grateful to be alive after everything that's happened? Did you want to die today? No. I wanted to live. Really live. I'm grateful to be here, I said, feeling the words a little more this time. And I'm grateful to be alive. Better, but this time, let it hurt. Excuse me? Show them that you're vulnerable. I wrinkled my nose at her. Show them that you're just an ordinary girl, just like them. That's the trick of my trade. How real, how vulnerable, can you seem without letting yourself actually be vulnerable at all? Vulnerable wasn't the story I'd chosen to tell when they'd been designing my wardrobe. I was supposed to have an edge. But sharpened girls had feelings, too. I'm grateful to be alive, I said, and I'm grateful to be here tonight. Good. Landon gave a little nod. Now we're going to play a little game. I'm going to ask you questions, and you're going to do the one thing you absolutely must master before I let you out of here to go to the gala tonight. What's that? I asked. You're not going to answer the questions. Landon's expression was intent. Not with words, not with your face, not at all. Unless and until you've got a question that you can, in some way, answer with the key message we've already practiced. Gratitude, I said, etc., etc. I shrugged. Doesn't sound very hard. Avery, is it true that your mother had a long-standing sexual liaison with Tobias Hawthorne? She almost got me. I almost spat out the word no, but somehow I refrained. Did you stage today's attack? What? Watch your face, she told me, and then, without losing a beat, How is your relationship with the Hawthorne family? I sat passive, not allowing myself to so much as think their names. What are you going to do with that money? How do you respond to the people calling you a con woman and a thief? Were you injured today? That last question gave me an opening. I'm fine, I said. I'm grateful to be alive, and I'm grateful to be here tonight. I expected accolades, but got none. Is it true that your sister is in a relationship with the man who tried to kill you? Is she involved with the attempt on your life? I wasn't sure if it was the way she'd snuck the questions in, right after my previous answer, or how close to the quick the question cut, but I snapped. No. The word burst from my mouth. My sister had nothing to do with this. Landon gave me a look. From the top, she said steadily. Let's try again. Chapter 71. After my session with Landon, she dropped me off in my bedroom where my style team awaited. I could have told him I wasn't going to the gala, but Landon had gotten me thinking. What kind of message would that send? That I was afraid? That I was hiding away? Or hiding something? That Libby was guilty? She's not. That's what I kept telling myself over and over again. I was halfway through hair and makeup when Libby let herself into my bedroom. My stomach muscles clenched, my heart jumping into my throat. Her face was streaked with running makeup. She'd been crying. She didn't do anything wrong. She didn't. Libby hesitated for 3 or 4 seconds, then threw herself at me, catching me up in the biggest, tightest hug of my life. I'm sorry. I am so, so sorry. I had a moment, exactly one, where my blood ran cold. I should have blocked him, Libby continued, but for what it's worth, I just put my phone in the blender, and then I turned the blender on. She wasn't apologizing for aiding and abetting Drake. She was apologizing for not blocking his number, for fighting with me when I'd wanted her to. I bowed my head, and a set of hands immediately lifted my chin back up as the stylists continued their work. Say something, Libby told me. I wanted to tell her that I believed her, but even saying the words felt disloyal, like an acknowledgement that I hadn't really been sure until now. You're going to need a new phone, I said. Libby gave a strangled little laugh. We're also going to need a new blender. She swiped the heel of her right hand across her eyes. No tears, the man making me up barked. That was aimed at me, not Libby, but she straightened too. You want to look like the picture we were given, correct? The man asked me, aggressively working some mousse through the hair. Sure, I replied. Whatever. If Elisa had given them a picture, that was one less decision for me to make, one less thing to think about. Like the current billion-dollar question, if Drake had shot at me, and Libby hadn't let him onto the estate, who had? An hour later, I stood facing the mirror. The stylists had braided my hair, but it wasn't just a braid. They divided my hair in half, and then each half into thirds. Each third had been bisected, and one half was wound around the other, giving the hair a spiraling, rope-like look. Tiny transparent hair ties and an ungodly amount of hairspray had held that in place as they'd begun to French braid my hair on each side. I had no idea what exactly had happened next, other than the fact that it had hurt like hell and required all 4 of my stylist's hands plus 1 of Libby's. But the final braid wrapped around my head to frame one side of my face. The coils were multicolored, showing off my lowlights and the natural blonde streaks in my ashy brown hair. The effect was hypnotizing, like nothing I'd ever seen. The makeup was less dramatic, natural, fresh, understated, everywhere but the eyes. I had no idea what witchcraft they'd invoked, but my charcoal-lined eyes looked twice their normal size, and green, a true green, with flecks that looked more gold than brown. And the piece de resistance. One of the stylists slipped a necklace around my neck, white gold and 3 emeralds. The jewels were the size of my thumbnail. You look beautiful, Libby told me. I looked nothing like myself. I looked like someone who belonged at a ball, and still, I almost backed out of going to the gala. The one thing that kept me from throwing in the towel was Libby. If there was ever a time for me to control the narrative, it was now. Chapter 72. Oren met me at the top of the stairs. Have the police gotten anything out of Drake? I asked. Has he admitted to the shooting? Who is he working with? Deep breath, Oren told me. Drake has more than implicated himself, but he's trying to paint Libby as the mastermind. That story doesn't add up. There's no security footage of him entering the estate, and there would be if, as he claims, Libby had let him through the gate. Our best guess at the moment is that he came in through the tunnels. The tunnels? I repeated. They're like the secret passages in the house, except they run under the estate. I know of two entrances, and they're both secure. I heard what Orin left unsaid. There are two that you know of, but this is Hawthorne House. There could be more. On my way to a ball, I should have felt like a fairy tale princess, but my horse-drawn carriage was an SUV identical to the one that Drake had sideswiped this morning. Nothing said fairy tale like an attempted assassination. Who knows the location of the tunnels? That was the question of the hour. If there were tunnels that Hawthorne House's head of security didn't even know about, I seriously doubted that Drake had come across them on his own. Libby wouldn't have known about them either. So who? Someone very, very familiar with Hawthorne House. Did they reach out to Drake? Why? That last question was less of a mystery. After all, why commit murder yourself when there was someone else out there willing and ready to do it for you? All someone would have had to know was that Drake existed, and that he'd already gotten violent once, and he had every reason to hate me. Within the walls of Hawthorne House, none of that was secret. Maybe his accomplice had sweetened the pie by telling him that if anything happened to me, Libby stood to inherit. They'd let a felon do the dirty work and take the fall. I sat in my bulletproof SUV in a $5,000 dress and a necklace that probably could have paid for at least a year of college, wondering if Drake's capture meant that the danger was over, or if whoever had given him tunnel access had other plans for me. The Foundation purchased two tables for tonight's event, Elisa told me from the front seat. Sarah was loath to part with any seats, but since it's technically your Foundation, she didn't have much of a choice. Elisa was acting like nothing had happened, like I had every reason to trust her, when it felt like reasons not to were stacking up. So I'll be sitting with them, I said without expression, the Hawthorns. One of whom, at least one of whom, might still want me dead. It's to your advantage if everything appears friendly between you. Elisa had to realize how ridiculous that sounded, given the context. If the Hawthorne family accepts you, that will go a long way of squelching some of the less seemly theories as to why you inherited. And what about the unseemly theories that one of them, at least one, wants me dead? I asked. Maybe it was Zara, or her husband, or Skye, or even Nan, who'd more or less told me that she'd killed her husband. We're still on high alert, Orin assured me, but it would be to our benefit if the Hawthorns didn't realize that. If the conspirators' hope was to pin things on Drake and Libby, let them think they've succeeded. Last time around, I'd blown the element of surprise. This time, things would be different. Chapter 73. Avery, look over here! Any comment about the arrest of Drake Sanders? Can you comment on the future of Hawthorne Foundation? Is it true that your mother was once arrested for solicitation? If it hadn't been for the 7 rounds of practice questions I'd been put through earlier, the last one would have gotten me. I would have answered, and my answer would have contained expletives, plural. Instead, I stood near the car and waited. And then the question I'd been waiting for came. With everything that's happened, how do you feel? I looked directly at the reporter who'd asked that question. I'm grateful to be alive, I said, and I'm grateful to be here tonight. The event was held in an art museum. We entered on the upper floor and descended a massive marble staircase into the exhibit hall. By the time I was halfway down, everyone in the room was either staring at me or not staring in a way that was worse. At the bottom of the stairs, I saw Grayson. He wore a tuxedo exactly the way he wore a suit. He was holding a glass, clear, with clear liquid inside. The moment he saw me, he froze in place, as suddenly and fully as if someone had stopped time. I thought back to standing with him at the bottom of the hidden staircase, to the way he'd looked at me, and on some level, I thought that was the way he was looking at me now. I thought I'd taken his breath away. Then he dropped a glass in his hand. It hit the floor and shattered, shards of crystal spraying everywhere. What happened? What did I do? Elisa nudged me to keep moving. I finished descending the stairs as the waitstaff hurried over to clean up the glass. Grayson stared at me. What are you doing? His voice was guttural. I don't understand, I said. Your hair, Grayson choked out. He lifted his free hand to my braid, his fingers nearly touching it before he pulled them into a fist. That necklace, that dress. What? I said. The only word he managed in reply was a name. Emily. It was always Emily. Somehow I made my way to the bathroom without looking too much like I was running away. I fumbled to tear my phone out of the black satin handbag I'd been given. Unsure what I was planning to do with the phone once I got it out, someone stepped up to the mirror beside me. "You look nice," Thea said, casting a glance sidelong at me. "In fact, you look perfect." I stared at her, and then comprehension dawned. "What did you do, Thea?" She glanced down at her own phone, hit a few buttons, and a moment later I had a text. I hadn't even realized she had my number. I opened the text and the picture attached, and all of the blood drained from my face. In this photo, Emily Laughlin wasn't laughing. She was smiling at the camera, a wicked little smile, like she was on the verge of a wink. Her makeup was natural, but her eyes looked unnaturally large, and her hair was exactly like mine. "What did you do?" I asked Thea again, more accusation this time than question. She'd invited herself along on my shopping trip. She was the one who suggested I'd wear green, just like Emily wore in this photo. Even my necklace was eerily like hers. I'd assumed, when the stylist had asked if I'd wanted to look like the picture, that Elisa was the one who supplied it. I'd assumed it was a photo of a model, not a dead girl. "Why would you do this?" I asked Thea, amending my question. "It's what Emily would have wanted." Thea pulled a tube of lipstick out of her purse. "If it's any consolation," she said, once she finished turning her lips into a sparkling ruby red. "I didn't do this to you." She'd done it to them. "The Hawthorns didn't kill Emily," I spat. "Rebecca said that it was her heart." Technically, she said that Grayson had said it was her heart. "How sure are you that the Hawthorne family isn't trying to kill you?" Thea smiled. She had been there this morning. She'd been shaken. And now she was acting like this was all a joke. "There is something fundamentally wrong with you," I said. My fury didn't seem to penetrate. "I told you the day we met that the Hawthorne family was a twisted, broken mess." She stared at the mirror a moment longer. "I never said that I wasn't one, too." Chapter 74. I took off the necklace and stood holding it in front of the mirror. The hair was a bigger problem. It had taken two people to put it up. It would take an act of God for me to get it down. "Avery?" Elisa stuck her head into the bathroom. "Help me," I told her.
"With what?"
"My hair." I reached back and started pulling at it, and Elisa caught my hands in hers. She transferred my wrists to her right hand and flipped a lock on the bathroom door with her left. "I shouldn't have pushed you," she said, her voice low. "This is too much too soon, isn't it?" "Do you know who I look like?" I asked her. I shoved the necklace in her face. She took it from my hands. She frowned. "Who do you look like?" That seemed like an honest question from a person who didn't like asking questions she didn't already know the answer to. "Emily Laughlin." I couldn't keep from cutting a glance back to the mirror. Thea dressed me up just like her. It took Elisa a moment to process that. "I didn't know." She paused, considering. "The press won't either. Emily was just an ordinary girl." There was nothing ordinary about Emily Laughlin. I didn't know when I'd come to believe that. The moment I'd seen her picture, my conversation with Rebecca, the very first time Jameson had said her name, or the first time I'd said it to Grayson. "If you stay in this bathroom much longer, people will take note," Elisa warned me. "They already have. For better or worse, you need to come out there." I'd come tonight because in some twisted way, I thought that putting on a happy face would protect Libby. I'd hardly be here if my own sister had tried to kill me, would I? "Fine," I told Elisa through gritted teeth. "But if I do this for you, I want your word that you'll protect my sister in any way you can. I don't care what your deal with Nash is, or what Nash's is with Libby. You don't just work for me anymore. You work for her, too." I saw Elisa swallowing back whatever it was she really wanted to say. All that exited her mouth was, "You have my word." I just had to make it through dinner. A dance or two. The live auction. Easier said than done. Elisa led me to a pair of tables that the Hawthorne Foundation had purchased. At the table on the left, Nan was holding court among the white-haired set. The table on the right was half filled with Hawthorns. Zara and Constantine, Nash, Grayson, and Xander. I made a beeline for Nan's table, but Elisa sidestepped and gently steered me to the seat directly next to Grayson. Elisa took the chair over, leaving only three open seats, at least one of which I assumed was for Jameson. Beside me, Grayson said nothing. I lost the battle not to flick my eyes in his direction, and found him staring straight ahead, not looking at me or anyone else at the table. I didn't do this on purpose, I told him under my breath, trying to keep the expression on my face normal for the benefit of our audience, partygoers, and photographers alike. Of course not, Grayson replied, his tone stiff. The words rote. I'd take the braid out if I could, I murmured, but I can't do it myself. His head tilted down slightly, his eyes closing, just for a moment. I know. I was overcome then by the mental image of Grayson helping Emily take out down her hair, his fingers working the braid out bit by bit. My arm bumped Elise's wine glass. She tried to catch it but didn't move fast enough. As the wine stained the white tablecloth red, I realized what should have been obvious right from the beginning, from the moment that the will had been read. I didn't belong here in this world, not at a party like this, not sitting beside Grayson Hawthorne, and I never would. Chapter 75. I made it through dinner without anyone trying to kill me, and Jameson never showed. I told Elisa that I needed some air, but I didn't go outside. I couldn't face the press again this soon, so I ended up in another wing of the museum instead, Orne playing shadow behind me. The wing was closed, the lights were dim, and the exhibit rooms were blocked off, but the corridor was open. I walked down the long hall, Orne's footsteps trailing mine. Up ahead there was a light shining, bright against all its surroundings. The cord blocking off this exhibit room had been moved to one side. Stepping past it felt like stepping out of a dark theater and into the sun. The room was bright. Even the frames on the paintings were white. There was only one person in the room, wearing a tuxedo without the jacket. Jameson. I said his name, but he didn't turn. He was standing in front of a small painting, looking at it intently from 3 or 4 feet away. He glanced at me as I walked toward him, then turned back to the painting. You saw me, I thought. You saw the way they did my hair. The room was quiet enough that I could hear the beating of my own heart. Say something. He nodded toward the painting. Four brothers, he said as I came to stand beside him. A Hawthorne family favorite, for obvious reasons. I made myself look at the painting, not him. There were four figures on the canvas, their features blurred. I could make out the lines of their muscles. I could practically see them in motion, but the artist hadn't been aiming for realism. My eyes went to the gold tag under the painting. Four Brothers, 1898, on loan from the collection of Tobias Hawthorne. Jameson angled his face back toward mine. I know you found the Davenport. He arched an eyebrow. You beat me to it. So did Grayson, I said. Jameson's expression darkened. You were right. The tree in the Blackwood was just a tree. The clue we're looking for is a number. 811. There's just one more. There is no we, I said. Do you even see me as a person, Jameson? Or am I just a tool? I might have deserved that. He held my gaze a moment longer, then looked back at the painting. The old man used to say that I have laser focus. I'm not built to care about more than one thing at a time. I wondered if that thing was the game, or her. I'm done, Jameson. The words echoed in the white room. With you, with whatever this is. I turned to walk away. I don't care that you're wearing Emily's braid. Jameson knew exactly what to say to make me stop. I don't care, he repeated, because I don't care about Emily. He let out a ragged breath. I broke up with her that night. I got tired of her little games. I told her I was done, and a few hours later she died. I turned back, and green eyes, a little bloodshot, settled on mine. I'm sorry, I said, wondering how many times he'd replayed their last conversation. Come with me to the Blackwood, Jameson pleaded. He was right. He had laser focus. You don't have to kiss me. You don't even have to like me, Eris, but please don't make me do this alone. He sounded raw, real in a way that he never had before. You don't have to kiss me. He said that like he wanted me to. I hope I'm not interrupting. In unison, Jameson and I looked toward the doorway. Grayson stood there, and I realized from his vantage point, all he would have seen when he'd walked in the room was the braid. For a moment, Grayson and Jameson stared at each other. You know where I'll be, Eris, Jameson told me, if there's any part of you that wants to find me. He brushed past Grayson on his way out the door. Grayson watched him go for the longest time before he turned back to me. "What did he say? When he saw you?"
"When he saw my hair,"
I swallowed. "He told me that he broke up with Emily the night she died."
Silence.
I turned back to look at Grayson. His eyes were closed, every muscle in his body taut.
"Did Jameson tell you that I killed her?"
Chapter 76. After Grayson left, I spent another 15 minutes in the gallery alone, staring at four brothers before Elisa sent someone to find me.
"I agree," Xander told me, even though I hadn't said anything for him to agree with. "This party sucks. The socialite to scone ratio is pretty much unforgivable."
I wasn't in the mood for scone jokes. Jameson said he broke up with Emily. Grayson claims that he killed her. Thea is using me to punish them both.
"I'm out of here," I told Xander.
"You can't leave yet."
I gave him a look.
"Why not?"
"Because..." Xander waggled his lone eyebrow.
"They just opened up the dance floor. You want to give the press something to talk about, don't you?"
One dance. That was all I was giving Elisa, and the photographers, before I got the hell out of here.
"Pretend I'm the most fascinating person you've ever met," Xander advised as he escorted me onto the dance floor for a waltz. He held out a hand for mine, then curved his other arm around my back. "Here, I'll help. Every year on my birthday, from the time I was 7 until I was 12, my grandfather gave me money to invest, and I spent it all on cryptocurrency because I am a genius, and not at all because I thought cryptocurrency sounded kind of cool."
He spun me once. I sold my holdings before my grandfather died for almost $100 million.
I stared at him.
"You what?"
"See," he told me. "Fascinating." Xander kept right on dancing, but he looked down.
"Not even my brothers know."
"What did your brothers invest in?" I asked. All this time, I'd been assuming that they'd been cut off with nothing. Nash had told me about Tobias Hawthorne's birthday tradition, but I hadn't thought twice about their investments.
"No idea," Xander said jauntily. "We weren't allowed to discuss it."
We danced on, the photographers snapping their shots. Xander brought his face very close to mine.
"The press is going to think we're dating," I told him, my mind still spinning at his revelation.
"As it so happens," Xander replied archly, "I excel at fake dating."
"Who exactly did you fake date?" I asked.
Xander looked past me to Thea.
"I am a human Rube Goldberg machine," he said. "I do simple things in complicated ways."
He paused. "It was Emily's idea for Thea and me to date. Em was, shall we say, persistent. She didn't know that Thea was already with someone."
"And you agreed to put on a show?" I asked incredulously.
"I repeat, I'm a human Rube Goldberg machine." His voice softened. "And I didn't do it for Thea."
"Then for who?"
It took me a moment to put it together. Xander had mentioned fake dating twice. Once with respect to Thea, and once when I'd asked him about Rebecca.
"Thea and Rebecca?" I said.
"Deeply in love," Xander confirmed. "Thea called her painfully beautiful.
The best friend and the younger sister. What was I supposed to do? They didn't think Emily would understand. She was possessive of the people she loved. And I knew how hard it was for Rebecca to go against her. Just once, Bex wanted something for herself."
I wondered if Xander had feelings for her. If fake dating Thea had been his twisted, Rube Goldberg way of saying that.
"Were Thea and Rebecca right?" I asked, "about Emily not understanding?"
"And then some."
Xander paused. "Em found out about them that night. She saw it as a betrayal."
"That night, the night she died."
The music came to an end, and Xander dropped my hand, keeping his other arm around my waist.
"Smile for the press," he murmured. "Give them a story. Look deep into my eyes. Feel the weight of my charm. Think of your favorite baked goods."
The edges of my lips turned up, and Xander Hawthorne escorted me off the dance floor to Elisa.
"You can go now," she told me, pleased, "if you like."
"Hell yes."
"You coming?" I asked Xander.
The invitation seemed to surprise him.
"I can't," he paused.
"I solved the Blackwood."
That got my full attention. "I could win this."
Xander looked down at his fancy shoes. "But Jameson and Grayson need it more. Head back to Hawthorne House. There'll be a helicopter waiting for you when we get there. Have the pilot fly you over the Blackwood."
"A helicopter?"
"Where you go," Xander told me, "they'll follow."
"They," as in his brothers.
"I thought you wanted to win," I said to Xander.
He swallowed, hard.
I do. Chapter 77. I'd only halfway believed Xander when he'd promised me a helicopter. But there it was, on the front lawn of Hawthorne House, blades still. Warren wouldn't let me step foot aboard it until he'd checked it over. Even then, he insisted on taking the pilot's spot. I climbed in the back and discovered Jameson already there. "Order a helicopter?" he asked me, like that was a perfectly normal thing to do. I buckled myself into the seat next to him. "I'm surprised you waited for liftoff." "I told you, Eris," he gave me a crooked smile. "I don't want to do this alone." For a split second, it was like the two of us were back at the racetrack, barreling toward the finish line. Then outside the helicopter, a flash of black caught my eye. A tuxedo. Grayson's expression was impossible to read as he climbed on board. "Did Jameson tell you that I killed her?" The echo of the question was deafening in my mind. As if he'd heard it, Jameson's head whipped toward Grayson. "What are you doing here?" Xander had said that where I went, both of them would follow. Jameson didn't follow me, I reminded myself, every nerve in my body alive. He got here first. "May I?" Grayson asked me, nodding toward an empty seat. I could feel Jameson staring at me, feel him willing me to say no. I nodded. Grayson sat behind me. Orin checked to make sure we were secure, then turned on the rotor. Within a minute, the sound of blades was deafening. My heart jumped into my throat as we took to the air. I'd enjoyed my first time on an airplane, but this was different. It was more. The noise, the vibration, the heightened sense that almost nothing separated me from the air. Or the ground. My heart was beating, but I couldn't hear it. I couldn't hear myself think. Not about the way Grayson's voice had broken, as he'd asked that question. Not about the way Jameson had told me that I didn't have to kiss him or like him. All I could think about was looking down. As we flew over the edge of the Blackwood, I could make out the twisted tangle of trees down below. Too dense for sunlight to shine through. But when my gaze shifted toward the center of the forest, the trees thinned out, opening to a clearing in the very center. Jameson and I had been nearing the clearing when Drake had started taking shots. I'd noted the grass, but I hadn't seen it, not the way I was seeing it now. From the overhead, the clearing, the lighter ring of trees surrounding it, and the dense outer forest formed, would look like a long, skinny letter O, or a zero. By the time the copter touched down, I felt like I was getting ready to burst out of my skin. I hopped out before the blades had fully stopped, adrenaline-fueled and giddy. 8110. Jameson bounded toward me. "We did it, Harris." He stopped right in front of me, lifting his hands, palm up. Drunk on the high of the helicopter, I did the same, and his fingers locked through mine. Four middle names, four numbers. Kissing him had been a mistake. Holding his hands now was a mistake, but I didn't care. 8110, I said. "That's the order we discovered the numbers in, and the order of the clues in the will. Westbrook, Davenport, Winchester, and Blackwood. In that order. A combination, maybe?" "There are at least a dozen safes in the house," Jameson mused. "But there are other possibilities. An address, coordinates. And there are no guarantee that the clue isn't scrambled. To solve it, we may have to reorder the numbers." An address, coordinates, a combination. I closed my eyes, and just for a second, just long enough for my brain to put together another possibility into words. A date? All four clues were numbers. They were also single digits. For a combination lock or coordinates, I would have expected some two-digit entries. But a date? The one or the zero would have to go at the front. 1108 would be 1108. November 8th, I said, and then I ran through the rest of the possibilities. 08-11, August 11th, 01-18, January 18th. Then I hit the last possibility, the last date. I stopped breathing. This was too big of a coincidence to be coincidence at all. 10-18, October 18th. I sucked in a breath. Every nerve in my body felt like it was alive. That's my birthday. I have a secret. My mother had told me on my 15th birthday 2 years ago before she died. About the day you were born. No. Jameson dropped my hands. Yes, I replied. I was born on October 18th. And my mother... This isn't about your mother. Jameson balled his fingers into fists and stepped back. Jameson? I had no idea what was going on here. If Tobias Hawthorne had chosen me because of something that had happened the day I was born, that was big, huge. This could be it. Maybe his path crossed my mom's while she was in labor. Maybe she did something for him while she was pregnant with me. Stop. The word cracked like a whip. Jameson was looking at me like I was unnatural, like I was broken, like the sight of me could turn stomachs, including and especially his. What are you? The numbers are not a date. Yes, I thought fiercely, they are. This can't be the answer, he said. I stepped forward, but he jerked back. I felt a light touch on my arm. Grayson. As gentle as his touch was, I got the distinct sense that he was holding me back. Why? What had I done? Emily died, Grayson told me, his voice tight, on October 18th, a year ago. That sick son of a bitch, Jameson cursed. All of this? The clues? The will? Her? All of it for this? He just found a random person born on that day to send a message? This message? Jamie, don't talk to me. Jameson swung his gaze from Grayson to me. Screw this, I'm done. As he stalked away in the night, I called after him. Where are you going? Congratulations, Eris, Jameson called back, his voice dripping with everything but felicitations. I guess you had the good fortune of being born on the right day. Mystery solved. Chapter 78. There had to be more to the puzzle than this. There had to be. I couldn't just be a random person born on the right calendar date. That can't be it. What about my mother? What about her secret? A secret she'd mentioned on my 15th birthday, a full year before Emily had died. What about the letter Tobias Hawthorne had left me? I'm sorry. What did Tobias Hawthorne have to apologize for? He didn't just randomly select a person with the right birthday. There has to be more to it than that. But I could hear Nash telling me, "You're the glass ballerina, or the knife." I'm sorry, Grayson spoke again beside me. It's not Jameson's fault that he's like this. It's not Jameson's fault. The invincible Grayson Hawthorne seemed to be having trouble talking. That this is how the game ends. I was still wearing my clothes from the gala. My hair was still in Emily's braid. I should have known. Grayson's voice was swollen with emotion. I did know. The day that the will was read, I knew that all of this was because of me. I thought of the way Grayson had shown up at my hotel room that night. He'd been angry, determined to figure out what I had done. What are you talking about? I searched his face and eyes for answers. How is this because of you? And don't tell me you killed Emily. No one, not even Thea, had called Emily's death a murder. I did, Grayson insisted, his voice low and vibrating with intensity. If it weren't for me, she wouldn't have been there. She wouldn't have jumped. Jumped? My throat went dry. Been where? I asked quietly. And what does any of this have to do with your grandfather's will? Grayson shuddered. Maybe I was meant to tell you, he said after a long while. Maybe that was always the point. Maybe you were always meant to be equal parts puzzle and penance. He bowed his head. I'm not your penance, Grayson Hawthorne. I didn't get the chance to say that out loud before he was talking again, and once he started, it would have taken an act of God to stop him. We'd always known her. Mr. and Mrs. Laughlin had been at Hawthorne House for decades. Their daughter and granddaughters used to live in California. The girls came to visit twice a year. Once with their parents at Christmas time, and again in the summer, for 3 weeks, alone. We didn't see much of them at Christmas, but in the summers we all played together. It was a bit like summer camp, really. You have camp friends who you see once a year, who have no place in your ordinary life. That was Emily, and Rebecca. They were so different from the four of us. Sky said it was because they were girls, but I always thought it was because there were only two of them, and Emily came first. She was a force of nature, and their parents were always so worried that she'd overexert herself. She was allowed to play cards with us, and other quiet indoor games, but she wasn't allowed to roam outside the way we did, or to run. She'd get us to bring her things. It became a bit of a tradition. Emily would set us on a hunt, and whoever found what she'd requested, the more unusual and hard to find, the better, won. What did you win? I asked. Grayson shrugged. We're brothers. We didn't have to win anything in particular. Just win. That tracked. And then Emily got a heart transplant, I said. Jameson had told me that much. He said that afterward, she wanted to live. Her parents were still protective, but Emily had lived in glass cages long enough. She and Jameson were 13. I was 14. She'd breeze in for the summers, the consummate daredevil. Rebecca was always after us to be careful, but Emily insisted that her doctors had said that her activity level was only limited by her physical stamina. If she could do it, there was no reason she shouldn't. The family moved here permanently when Emily was 16. She and Rebecca didn't live on the estate, the way they had during visits, but my grandfather paid for them to attend private school. I saw where this was going. She wasn't just a summer camp friend anymore. She was everything, Grayson said, and he didn't exactly say it like it was a compliment. Emily had the entire school eating out of the palm of her hand. Maybe that was our fault. Even just being Hawthorne adjacent changed the way what people looked at you. Thea's statement came back to me. Or maybe, Grayson continued, it was just because she was M. Too smart, too beautiful, too good at getting what she wanted. She had no fear. She wanted you, I said, and Jameson, and she didn't want to choose. She turned it into a game. Grayson shook his head. And God help us, we played. I want to say that it was because we loved her, that it was because of her, but I don't even know how much of that was true. There's nothing more Hawthorne than winning. Had Emily known that, used it to her advantage? Had it ever hurt her? The thing was, Grayson choked, she didn't just want us. She wanted what we could give her. Money? Experiences, Grayson replied. Thrills. Race cars and motorcycles and handling exotic snakes. Parties and clubs and places we weren't supposed to be. It was a rush. For her and for us. He paused. For me, he corrected. I don't know what it was, exactly, for Jamie. Jameson broke up with her the night she died. One night, I got a call from Emily, late. She said that she was done with Jameson and all she wanted was me. Grayson swallowed. She wanted to celebrate. There's this place called Devil's Gate. It's a cliff overlooking the Gulf, one of the most famous cliff-diving locations in the world. Grayson angled his head down. I knew it was a bad idea. I tried to form words, any words. How bad? He was breathing heavily now. When we got there, I headed for one of the lower cliffs. Emily headed for the top, past the danger signs, past the warnings. It was the middle of the night. We shouldn't have been there at all. I don't know why she wouldn't let me wait until morning. Not until later, when I realized she'd lied about choosing me. Jameson had broken up with her. She'd called Grayson, and she hadn't been in the mood to wait. Cliff diving killed her, I asked. No, Grayson said. She was fine. We were fine. I went to grab our towels. And when I came back, Emily wasn't in the water anymore. She was just lying on the shoreline, dead. He closed his eyes. Her heart. You didn't kill her, I said. The adrenaline did. Or the altitude. The change in pressure. I don't know. Jameson wouldn't take her. I shouldn't have either. She made decisions. She had agency. It wasn't your job to tell her no. I knew instinctively that no good could come of saying any of that, even if it was true. You know what my grandfather told me after Emily's funeral? Family first. He said that what happened to Emily wouldn't have happened if I'd put my family first, if I'd refused to play along, if I'd chosen my brother over her. Grayson's vocal cords tensed against his throat, as if he wanted to say something but couldn't. Finally it came. That's what this is about. 1018, October 18th, the day Emily died, your birthday. It's my grandfather's way of confirming what I already know deep down. All of this, all of it, is because of me. Chapter 79. When Grayson left, Oren escorted me back to the house. How much did you hear? I asked him. My mind tangled with thoughts and emotions I wasn't sure I was ready to handle. Oren gave me a look. How much did you want me to have heard? I bit at the inside of my lip. You knew Tobias Hawthorne. Would he have picked me just to inherit because Emily Laughlin died on my birthday? Did he decide to leave his fortune to a random person born on October 18th? Hold a lottery? I don't know, Avery. Oren shook his head. The only person who ever knew what Tobias Hawthorne was thinking was Mr. Hawthorne himself. I made my way back through the halls of Hawthorne House, back toward the wing I shared with my sister. I wasn't certain that either Grayson or Jameson would ever speak a word to me again. I didn't know what the future held, or why the idea that I might have been chosen for a completely trivial reason felt like such a punch to the gut. How many people on this planet shared my birthday? I stopped on the stairs in front of the portrait of Tobias Hawthorne that Xander had shown me, what felt like a lifetime ago. I racked my mind now, as I'd done then, for any memory, any moment in time where my path had crossed with the billionaires. I looked Tobias Hawthorne in the eye, Grayson's silver eyes, and silently asked him why. Why me? Why were you sorry? I pictured my mother playing I Have a Secret. Did something happen the day I was born? I stared at the portrait, taking in every wrinkle on the old man's face, every hint of personality in his posture, even the muted color in the background. No answers. My eyes caught on the artist's signature. Tobias Hawthorne, XXVIII. I looked back at the old man's silver eyes. The only one who ever really knew what Tobias Hawthorne was thinking was Mr. Hawthorne himself. This was a self-portrait, and the letters next to his name? Roman numerals, I whispered. Avery, Orne said beside me, everything okay? In Roman numerals, X was 10, V was 5, and I was 1. 10, I put my finger under the first X, then moved it to the rest of the letters, reading them as a single unit. 18. Remembering the mirror that had hidden the armory, I reached behind the portrait's frame. I wasn't sure what I was feeling for until I found it. A button. A release. I pushed it, and the portrait swung outward. Behind it, on the wall, was a keypad. Avery? Orne said again, but I was already bringing my fingers up to the keypad. What if the numbers aren't the final answer? The possibility caught me in its jaws and wouldn't let go. What if they're meant to lead to the next clue? I brought my index finger to the keypad and tried the obvious combination. 1018. There was a beep, and then the top of the step below me began to rise, revealing a compartment underneath. I ducked down and reached inside. There was only one thing in the hollowed stair, a piece of stained glass. It was purple in the shape of an octagon, with a tiny hole in the top, through which a sheer, shimmering ribbon had been threaded. It looked almost like a Christmas ornament. As I held the stained glass up by the string, my eyes caught on the underside of the panel. Etched into the wood was the following verse. Top of the clock, meet me at high. Tell the late day hello, wish the morning goodbye. A twist and a flip, what do you see? Take them two at a time, and come find me.